My question is, why does it burn when I pay? And I believe Michael from the Yukon was trying to check in. Michael, I've got you in.
Fuck Michael, he ain't coming in.
USL, well, thanks, Ken.
This is EY1MHS.
All right, let's get into this one here. This goes back to the way back in the 1950s where all this started. Back in the 60s, Frank Drake, and he was famous for the Drake equation. He actually led the startup, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and was officially started as Project OSMA at the Green Bank Observatory in Virginia. And the observatory had a 25-meter, 82-foot dish antenna, and Epsilon Eridan and Tau Ceti from April to July of 1960. And since the beginning of the search of ET, there's been no conclusive evidence of an advanced species in the cosmos. However, there still remains instances of signals that cannot be ruled out. Just nothing. It's that old thing, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And a new paper that was published by Richard H. Stanton tells of his survey of more than 1,300 stars over a period of a number of years. He was looking for optical signals. A lot of searches for SETI are looking for RF signals, but he was approaching things a little bit different. He's looking for optical signals. His research uncovered two fast pulses that were identical, coming from a sun-like star about 100 light-years from us, and the pulses matched those of another star from about 4 years prior. Stop it. And Stanton, he had been with NASA for a number of years. He worked on the Voyager missions. After he retired, he focused on the search for extraterrestrial intelligence by employing a 76.2 centimeters, 30-inch telescope, located at the Shea Meadow Observatory in Big Bear, California. His research has appeared in the several astronomical journals. So unlike SETI's traditional setup to look for ETs by RF signals, Richard looks for transmissions of pulse light that could have come from laser communications or directed energy arrays. Optical SETI goes back to 1961. Just dropping. And it goes back to 1961, where it was reasoned that the best way to send a signal over vast distances in space is by way of a pulse that outshines the civilization's parent star. And this would be in nanoseconds, so the in between the pulses, you're looking at nanoseconds. So recently, Stanton reported a pulse when looking at, it was a star. It was a system, star system, it was HD 89389. It's an F-type star. Stars are categorized OBA, F, and G, and K, and M. And in descending order, they go from hottest to coolest. I'm just dropping. So this star is slightly bigger and brighter than our sun, and it's located in Ursa Major. So the signal came in as two fast identical bursts, 4.4 seconds apart, and didn't show up on any previous searches. He compared them to signals coming from airplanes, satellites, meteors, lightning, atmospheric scintillation, system noise, so on and so forth. And the pulses were unique compared to anything prior. A couple of things stood out. Just dropping. Actually, there's a few things that stood out. The star went from a brighter to dimmer phase and back to normal in about 0.2 seconds. The variation too powerful to be a result of random noise or atmospheric turbulence. So how does a star that far away partially disappear in a tenth of a second? The source of this can't be that far away from us. The next one here, three events. They occurred where essentially identical pulses happened 1.2 and 4.4 seconds. In 1,500 hours of looking, no signal pulse resembling these has ever been found. And next, the stars find a structure of light between peaks of the first pulse reoccur almost exactly, and the second pulse was 4.4 seconds later. There's no known explanation for this. in the next one, which is dropping. Nothing was found moving in close proximity to the star in simultaneous photos or even with the background sensor. And the sensor can readily detect distant satellites moving near a target star. Things like airplanes, satellites, meteors, birds, etc. Are all much different from these pulses, so they don't register with this. And looking at the historical data, another pair of pulses were found around HD 217014, 51 Pegasi, in 2021. It's a main sequence star, 50.6 light years away from us, and similar to the Sun. And going back even further, in 1995, an exoplanet was detected orbiting this star, which has since been named Dimidium. It was one of the first exoplanets detected around a main sequence star. And at that time, the signal was passed off as a false signal from BIRD. Further analysis ruled this out for all the pulses. One possibility was diffraction caused by Earth's atmosphere due to a shock wave, and that's since been ruled out. Just dropping. And Stanton feels that whatever caused these pulses must be pretty close to Earth and might be very close to our solar system. So if it's, let's say, ETI-based, extraterrestrial intelligence-based, then it's close by. And until more data is collected, no one can say whether extraterrestrials were actually involved. And I'll point out here, too, that when people hear these reports, they jump to conclusions right away about it. But in 2015, you have to remember, 2015, and it wasn't reported in 2016, there was a radio burst came from the direction of HD 164595, and it was thought to be from ET back then, and later it was determined to have been a military signal. So we'll have to do a lot more research on this new pulse that's shown up before they can make any conclusions about what it is, really. So as it is right now, it's just an unknown.
No one cares, this thing.
And this is VH3KX. Ken here, and if you'd like to join us, I'm translating from Toronto, Ontario. Ken, come on in. And we're here each week, 9 p.m., 0100 hours, or 9 p.m. is my local time, 0100 hours. You can join us. And if you'd like to join us here tonight, or you have a comment, come on in. And then the next one, the universe is dying faster than once thought. Our universe is going to be here forever. And they've recalibrated, and they've come up with some new numbers about how long we have to go. If you'd like to join us, if you have a comment, come on in.
No one fucking cares what you're talking about, motherfucking niggers. I hear another Trump supporter out there. Don't ignore.
Oh, man, I'm a fucking KKK supporter. White, it's all right. Brown, put it down.
I just laugh a little bit. Don't acknowledge. Don't acknowledge.
And the universe is dying faster than once thought. There's a number of scenarios how the universe is probably going to end. I'll touch on those really quick at the end of this. But new research is suggesting that the universe's last stars, they'll probably wink out in about 10 to the exponent 78 years from now. So that's quite a ways away. Although this is a mind-boggling large number in terms of time, it appears to be much sooner than the old estimate of 10 to the exponent 1,100 years. So that's 10 with 1,100 zeros behind it. And the new findings, they came out Monday, May 12th, in the journal Cosmology and Astroparticle Physics. And even at that, there's nothing that guarantees the universe will be around even that period of time. And as stars run out of fuel, they don't completely disappear. Stars like our Sun blow off their atmospheres during their final stages and leave behind a cooling core, which in the case of our Sun will be a white dwarf, just dropping. And stars much more massive can end up as a supernova that turn into a neutron star, or if even more massive, they'll collapse down further into a black hole. And all of those are called stellar remnants. So Stephen Hawking, back in 1974, said that black holes would eventually evaporate by way of Hawking radiation. So, exploring quantum field theory, one can determine that the vacuum of space is inundated with tiny vibrations that create what's called virtual particles that can produce small amounts of light, photons. And Hawking said that gravitational forces at the mouth of a black hole could create photons by way of these virtual particles, which would sap a black hole of energy and eventually cause it to disappear. So virtual particles, they're popping into out of existence near the event horizon of a black hole. One part of that pair gets sucked in, the other part is still out in space, and to maintain the thermodynamic integrity of space and entropy, the one that goes in, it takes away a little bit of the energy from a black hole. So over time, a black hole will evaporate. So much later on, 50 years almost, researchers in the Netherlands proposed that all objects with enough mass would meet a similar fate. They would decay much like a black hole. The new research looks at how long this process, which is referred to as gravitational pair production, would take to decay all stellar remnants. And from this, neutron stars, they take about 10 to the exponent 68 years. White dwarfs, 10 to the exponent 78 years. Supermassive black holes, 10 to the exponent 96 years. And all galaxies will run out of star-building material by then. Actually, the universe will go dark long before that. Because of the universe's acceleration, it will expand so fast that in 150 to 200 billion years, most of the galaxies will cease being visible. We will only see the stars in our Milky Way, and even those will start drifting off at some point. In about 17 trillion years, the last star will have died. Our sun will last about another 5 billion years. After all the stars die, there's a hypothetical process that's referred to as photon decay that happens. So photon decay, the protons transform into lighter particles, neutral pion and a positron. So pion is just it's a meson. It's very light, unstable. The decay is about 26 nanoseconds, and a neutral pion decays in about 88 attoseconds. So that's 8.5 times 10 to the minus 17 seconds. So each of those are made of a quark and an antiquark. So they decay very quickly. So at the end of the universe, things will start winking out, and all the particles basically will start decomposing, and there'll just be a very slight radiative background glow, and that'll be it. And this is BHVKEX, and the next one here is about cleaning Earth orbit of debris. David, WA1EW, sent this one in. Thank you, David, for that. Very interesting. I'm glad you sent that in. I'll touch on that in a moment. Any stations out there, if you'd like to join us, you have a comment, come on in.
VA3VWX, I got a question for you, Ken, about part photon decay.
Tom, come on in.
So you were talking about photon decay, right? But generally speaking, at least to my knowledge, photons are still considered to have zero mass, right? So, I mean, is it because you're using that would require like a theoretical extension on the non-standard model, right? A theoretical extension on the standard model to suggest that there is a decay, but if it's massless, there may not be a decay. So what happens in the case where there's no decay? It just continues on as is?
Yeah, photons, to say they decay, that's not an accurate way. Yeah, they don't have mass, they're not going to decay. The idea behind this decay with the universe, everything starts decaying, everything starts breaking up. You end up getting a very white glow, radiative glow, which is just basically low energy photons. So even after a period of time, although photons, when it's talking about decay, you're not talking about them breaking into other particles and things like this. You're talking about them slowly losing energy and becoming less energetic.
So in that case, then would the photons? Here's the thing I don't get, right? Because photons get absorbed, they can't escape. If they don't have any mass, how come they get sucked into black holes, right? So that's never really made sense to me. I know I'm getting off topic here, but the reason I ask is because all the stars are dead, etc., right? And the black holes, I mean, they, with Hawking radiation, they would eventually dissipate, right? Theoretically, black holes would have to go bye-bye eventually, but assuming that there's photons that outlast these remnant black holes, they don't really have anything to stop them or absorb them, right? I suppose there's going to be remaining mass in the universe, right? Rocks and stuff. So I suppose if they could come into contact with that, and that would be enough to slow them down, and then you get decay there. But in the case of black holes absorbing light, it's interesting because if it has no mass, and theoretically it shouldn't be affected by gravity, but it is affected by gravity.
And as a VHVXX. A couple of things there with photons. You've heard of light sails, for instance, and the same question could be asked about light sails. The light sails are use photons to push this light sail, and coming from the sun, and you can achieve really huge velocity. So someone could say, well, you know, photons don't have mass, so how can they possibly impact the sail? Well, they have momentum. They don't have to have mass to have momentum, and that's the energy that's imparted to a momentum that gives those sails the velocity they need. And photons coming in contact with black holes, being massless, doesn't mean that they can't be captured by a black hole. Just dropping. Think of it this way. The black hole, not that it's having a gravitational effect, let's say a pulling effect on the photons themselves, but gravity. Gravity is just, in its most basic form, it's just a curvature of space. You have a mass sitting in space. It curves the space around it. And like a road, if you're going down a road in your car has to follow the bumps and curves and the ups and downs of the road. And light has to do the same thing through space-time. Once space starts getting curved by huge masses, like let's say a sun, it has to follow that curvature of space-time. It has no choice. It's like a road, like a car on a road. It has to follow that. So a black hole, it has an incredible amount of gravitational warping that's influencing space-time. So it's got this huge, huge gravitational well. So a photon comes along. Just dropping. So a photon comes along, and it gets captured by this gravitational well. I mean, it's fallen into this huge, huge curve. And so it, as it's trying to get out of this curve, it's using a lot of its energy to get away. And as it's using this energy, it starts getting its wavelength stretched further and further into the red end of the spectrum. So when you're on, let's say you're standing on a black hole and you're to shine a flashlight straight up in the air, it's not that the light is actually freezing. What it's doing, it's trying to fight its way out of this gravitational black hole, out of this huge, huge warpage in space. And when it's doing this, it's stretching itself out because the distance it's trying to get away from is increasing because of this warpage. So it's not really in terms of, let's say, thinking of gravity as a magnet that's capturing this photon. It's this photon that's trying to accommodate this warpage in space and following the path of this warpage. And this is VH3KEX. And any other comments or check-ins? Oh, just before we do, I just going back to the topic about the universe and its end, I said I would mention about some of the possibilities how the universe could end. Just dropping. There's a few. The Big Freeze. This is where expansion, the universe is expanding, and it's accelerating as it's expanding. And there's probably at some point in our universe right now where the outer limits of it are expanding faster than the speed of light, or at least at the speed of light, and over time they will eventually exceed the speed of light. Now that doesn't violate relativity in the least. But the Big Freeze, and this is where expansion causes the cosmos to eventually reach an absolute zero. So you'll have maximum entropy at that point. Complex systems, organized systems start to decay. Energy systems of photons, atoms, this and that starts to drop off. Energy distribution and entropy is equally distributed everywhere. So everything expands so far out that it just loses energy and it just kind of fizzles out. The Big Rip. And this is where the Hubble constant comes in. The Hubble constant, this is the description of the universe, how fast it's expanding, and that's fueled by dark energy. So again, that's the same sort of thing as the Big Freeze, that concept. You keep expanding and accelerating more and more and more until finally everything is torn apart because dark energy models several models out there about dark energy suggest that over time it's actually getting greater. There's some new theories coming in and say it might not. It might start to drop off at some point. It's dropping. But dark energy is considered repulsive gravity. Gravity pulls things in, and dark energy is what pushes everything out. So if you think in terms of having gravity reversed to the point where it starts to increase to the point where it's actually now starting to tear things apart. So that's how dark energy would work during a big rip. Big crunch. This is where acceleration decreases at some point. There's enough mass in the universe that causes it to start contracting, and eventually everything ends up as a single small point in space-time. And then there's the big bounce. And the big bounce, it collapses and rebounds into another big bang and cycle. And then there's vacuum decay, which is probably the weirdest and the strangest and actually the most frightening of them all. It's vacuum energy. And it drops past its lower state. The universe has a certain energy level. Everywhere in space, it doesn't matter, you could take a vacuum, you couldn't create a vacuum that doesn't have some energy in it. So the space has this intrinsic vacuum energy that comes out from quantum field theory. It's just dropping. So the energy level of our universe, this ambient energy, should it drop past its lowest state or get to a lower state, this results in some very strange things happening. At that point, our physics, the way our universe is running right now, the physics in our universe depends on where this energy level is right now, this vacuum energy state that we're in right now. So if that happens to change, our physics changes almost instantaneously. And so at that point, new physics is introduced into our universe, and everything is destroyed immediately. So think of it as this big wave coming in. It's just erasing everything in its path, and it's creating a new universe with new physics in it, and we are obliterated. So a few scenarios there where our universe where it ends. No one knows for sure right now. They're just theories. Nobody knows exactly how the universe will end. The next one here, clean the Earth orbit of debris. And as I mentioned earlier, David, WA1EAW, sent this in. Any additional stations, comments come on in before I touch on this one.
What the fuck is this piece of shit? Do I have to kill you? What if it was just to kick the devil of the shit out of you?
That is a Trump supporter right there.
You're a fucking old cocksucker who's probably got another year to live.
Oscar X-ray, KJ5FOX, no comment.
Fucking piece of the shit.
And this next one here, David, thanks so much for sending that in. And I've truncated this one, and it's a synopsis of the original article, but I took the salient points out and I thought you'd find interesting. Just dropping.
Lame as fuck, nigger.
VA3VWX. Hey, Ken, you got a question for coming in from an American station.
I have a question. Why's my diarrhea so runny?
KF5ZYN, comment.
And Jason, come on in.
Hi, Jason. Fuck you, eh?
Donald Trump.
You know, Tom was talking about the photons not having mass and how they, I guess, go towards, or they follow the momentum towards the black holes. It got me thinking about, like, the water, how the light reflects when it hits the water. So when it does that, say, like, you have an eddy in a river and there's a swirl, when the light is refracting, like when it hits the plane, does the swirl affect the refraction as well? That was my question.
My question is, why the fuck are niggers black?
And this is VH3KX. And Jason, yeah, it does. Reflections do affect the they can affect the photon's velocity. Reflections and refraction, like let's say you pass light beam through a prism. You get all those colors. You get the spectrum. And that is evidence of light slowing down through that medium. When you talk about the velocity of light, the velocity of light is, as a constant, is valid in a vacuum of space. But through a material, you can slow the speed of light down, which results in the color of the spectrum. You get all those, the reds, the greens, the blues. That's all the different wavelengths. So to your question, yeah, if you reflect something, it can affect the energy of the photons just dropping.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the gravitational pull of the Earth, the ozone layer, followed by the photosynthesis, the nucleus, the fucking marijuana plant, followed by the 1.21 gigawatts of power from the fucking power of the lightning bolt, making you back to the future at fucking 88 miles per hour. Big fucking deal, Mr. Science Guy.
There's another thing here, too, with reflection, there's which we're referring to as an evanescent wave, where actually some of that light doesn't necessarily reflect right off the surface. It has just enough energy, the photons have just enough energy to pass through that. On another net, maybe next week, talk about quantum tunneling, which incorporates the idea of evanescent waves, where you can have electron where it actually instantaneously appears on the opposite side of an object. And how does it do that? How does it pass through like that? We'll talk about that next time, too. All right. Thanks, Jason.
Fuck you.
And at the beginning of each of the science nets, I give a quick rundown of the amount of space debris orbiting our planet. And like unused satellites, rocket bodies, various bits and pieces of this and that, and the Kepler effect as well, things bashing into each other and creating more particles and more pieces. And some interesting news came out. Regarding efforts by the University of Athens students in their development of a CubeSat drag sail, or sails. A drag sail. It works by increasing the orbit of satellites by using a deployable membrane with a sufficient area to increase atmospheric drag of that object it's being deployed from. So students at Athens have come up with a cost-effective way to help bring down small satellites when they expire. And this is all part of the Clean Space Initiative that will hopefully help maintain some of the long-term orbital sustainability in space without all this clutter. So when stuff is supposed to come down, it will come down, and it'll drag it into the atmosphere and promote it burning up instead of it just staying up in space. And the U.S., the U.S. is actually working on a version of this as well. It's called NanoSail-D. And this NanoSail-D has got a surface membrane. The area is about 10 meters square. And it's made of polyamide with aluminum plating on one side. So the same sort of thing. So there's a few places that are incorporating this now as a way to make sure things come down when they should come down and they don't remain in orbit, and increasing the clutter that's up there. And this is the A3KX. And I think we're just about done here for tonight. I'll see if there are any additional check-ins or comments, and we can pick up again next week. This is the A3KX. If you'd like to join us, come on in. All right, then. Well, I think we'll tie the ribbons here for tonight. We'll pick up again next week. And before we end things here tonight, I will mention if any of you have any feedback for the net, I'm on QRSZ. My contact information is there, so feel free to send me a line. And if you'd like to take the mic one evening to present a topic, let me know. You can do that as well. You don't have to be a professional in any particular field. Just if you have an interest in science, technology, you'd like to talk about it, come on in, present your idea. And this net is also associated with the Skywide Amateur Radio Club. You can find that at www.skywide.ca, or just do a simple Google search for the Skywide Amateur Radio Club. You'll find us there, too. And with that, then, I guess we'll tie the ribbons here. And so it's time to wrap things up. We've been here tonight with the Science and Tech Net, and once again we're here at 9 p.m. my local time, 0100 hours GMT, each Saturday night. So if you'd like to join us, pencil it in your calendar. We'll be here. And before I end here tonight, I always like to express my gratitude to the owner of the repeater that gets me through the system here on the Woo repeater, Steve Woo. Thank you so much. And Adrian helps get us through on the Canada Hub. And of course, the net control station, nice, the VH3KX. And thanks everyone for joining us tonight. Thanks for coming in here and for the conversations that come back and forth. And this is VH3KX. I will now close the net and I'll return the frequency to other amateur use. And we'll talk again next week. So stay safe and well, everyone. And we'll talk again next week. This is VH3KX, and I'll be clear.
Good night, Ken. Have a good night, Victor Alpha 3, Victor Whiskey X-ray.
Ken, good night, Tom. Have a good night tonight, there. Good presentation. VE3WV, that's clear.
Thanks for a great night, Ken. VE3GFX.
Thank you as well, VE3 Victor Romeo X-ray.